Hey kids, this is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated to Ring of Honor. This is episode 45 for November 27th, 2018. My name is Harley R. Paget, and I have been covering Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch for one calendar year. 1 year ago yesterday, I published my very first ROH TV report for the Torch, and here I am a year later, hosting 45 episodes of this podcast, contributing to the Wednesday live cast, PWT Talks NXT, co-hosting the VIP podcast, Elite Repeat, hosting the 2018 Mae Young Classic podcast, covering nearly every single Honor Club event in written recap form, and sometimes I just stand on street corners and hand out flyers for Pro Wrestling Torch 2, just to like businessmen and bankers, people getting on the subway, just spreading the word. I'm joined by Emily Fear.
Happy anniversary! Happy anniversary! Happy anniversary! Happy anniversary to you!
You need the singing telegram from the Flintstones.
Well, you know, I didn't want to do it exactly to the tune of happy birthday because I believe that is copyrighted and we could get sued.
On the Flintstones, it's like, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
You know, I knew I was flat. But yes, happy anniversary.
Woo.
How far you've come from the young urchin peddling your talents on the street side to now a podcast impresario of all things wrestling.
When I started writing for the Pro Wrestling Torch, War Raiders were still called War Machine. Deonna Purrazzo was the future of the Women of Honor division. Josh Woods was the most recent top prospect winner. So much has changed.
So much has changed. What's the biggest difference between when you started like covering ROH for the Torch and now?
The elite. Yeah. Like when I started, being the elite had been around for what months? When did we say it launched? April 2017?
Are you talking about
the web series? I think it was February 2017.
2016.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Really?
Yes. Go back and listen to Elite Repeat.
Nobody listens to that.
Come on. We have at least three listeners.
This is why I do a lot of research for that show because my memory is shoddy. I'll take your word for it, February 2016. So there you go. When I started covering ROH for the Torch, I've been watching ROH for 6 or 7 years, but I didn't watch Being the Elite. So I had like very little interest in Bullet Club. I was confused why they were heels, but they were getting cheered. Storylines like the Where's Hangman thing made no sense to me whatsoever. There's a lot of like stuff where I was really left out. And it was my first Talking Honor co-host, Lola Bradbury, who was like, you have to watch it. It makes ROH so much better, and it's just a great show.
Lola was right.
Yeah, and obviously getting into that changed a lot, because now I'm doing a podcast on it, and now a lot more respect for coding the bugs. I can't imagine how I would have felt about All In if I didn't watch Being the Elite. I wouldn't have been nearly as excited.
That was a big question around All in general, which was, like, if you weren't a Being the Elite fan, if you hadn't been following those storylines, like, how much you were going to enjoy of the show, and I'd like to think that you could still enjoy 99% of it. There were some jokes and stuff that you probably wouldn't get unless you were watching that series, but it does make a difference. And the fan reaction at All In, to All In, post All In really is about like the following of Being the Elite.
Yeah, but that's not to discount ROH. Like ROH has plenty going for them besides the Elite. And they've been around for 16 years, almost 17 years now. In fact, today they launched a brand new web series available on YouTube, much like Being the Elite, much like NWA 10 Pounds of Gold, because it's produced by Dave Lagana. It's called ROH The Pinnacle. No indication as to how many episodes it's going to be. This first one is 9.5 minutes long. And confession, I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Yeah, neither have I. I mean, it just dropped. It just dropped today.
It dropped like maybe a couple hours before we are set to record this, and I had to eat dinner and stuff.
Yeah, I had noodles to eat, all right? Come on, guys.
But I'm definitely, like, it's bookmarked. I'm going to watch it maybe when we finish here, maybe tomorrow morning. And it sounds good. It sounds, from what I've read, it's sort of charting a little bit of the history of ROH with a lot of contemporary wrestlers like Jay Lethal talking about what ROH means to them and just some great stuff leading into Final Battle. And if it continues beyond that, presumably maybe even leading up to Madison Square Garden, which is their next huge show.
I really hope it leads up to Madison Square Garden, because, like, how cool would that be to get some behind the scenes on that, especially when we don't know if we will see, like, any, you know, being the elite behind the scenes footage of Madison Square Garden. So it's nice to think that, like, I'm wondering if the Pinnacle is also ROH's way of replacing that behind the scenes footage at ROH, because they know that might be coming to an end.
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt like being the elite, I understand if another team, you know, started doing their own show like Being the Elite, they'd be accused of just being derivative or being a ripoff. But that doesn't mean that you can't do something like it. Not exactly the same, but something in the same medium or the same vein. In the same way that you could say that Being the Elite is kind of like the Broken Universe.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, these ideas are not like, you know, like you could say that Being Elite is like Wrestling Road Diaries. These things are not entirely unique, and they're not entirely properties of one person. So, you know, ROH has every right to document its history, and the way they're doing it is not that much different than any number of other people who have chosen to document their histories. So it doesn't just belong to Being Elite. Besides, I get the sense that the Pinnacle is taking much more of a documentary feel than what Being Elite has become.
Yeah, I want to say it was going into maybe Death Before Dishonor, or it was another show, but the Briscoes had a little web video they did themselves, which was felt very Being Elite inspired, but I also remember thinking at the time was really cool, and it was just them at their chicken farm, but all their relatives were there, like their uncle and their cousins and their mom, and they were all hanging out and having a barbecue and drinking beers, while also, like, sending threats to the Young Bucks and stuff, and you see them, like, walk, the video, like, opened with Mark and Jay, like, driving across, like, the field in their truck, and they're shot from inside the truck, and I was just like, this is so cool. This is, like, just a video and a view that we never get to see in wrestling anywhere, let alone in ROH. ROH does a lot of the standing in front of the ROH backdrop backstage, right?
Yeah.
But even WWE, with all their production, all their millions and billions of dollars, rarely film outside of the arena. So getting to see a shot, like, inside a truck out in nature, I was like, this is really cool, just from a cinematography standpoint, first and foremost.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like you get, in those glimpses, you get a sense of, like, the wrestlers beyond the arena and beyond, like, the ring, in a way that WWE tends to just have their people in such a vacuum. It almost feels like they never even, like, go outside, let alone, like, leave the backstage area.
Yeah, and setting is so defining to who a character is. Seeing something, like, if you're writing a comic or you're watching a TV show, seeing a character's bedroom tells you so much about that person.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, in a writing class I was in once, one of the exercises that has stayed with me for a long time, in fact, I use it with my students when I teach them creative writing, is, you know, if you are forming a main character for your story, you know, envision spaces in which they inhabit on a regular and start with their bedroom. Like, what does their bedroom look like? Is it sloppy? Is it messy? Is it clean? Is it tidy? Is it big? Is it small? Like, think about the way your character lives in their most intimate space, because that tells you everything you really need to know about a character.
The one I remember is, describe what's in their garbage can.
Ah, yes. Yeah, but same thing, right? Like,
yeah.
A way of intimately understanding somebody in a way that, like, isn't just biography.
Yeah, 1 or 2 weeks ago on TV, we saw Beer City Bruiser sitting at the bar, and Brian Malone came up to talk to him and be like, hey, what's going on? We got a match. And even that, I was like, wow, change of pace.
Yeah, I loved that. I did.
I literally see them at the bar. Like, this makes sense. This is, like, where they are when they're not in the ring. A lot of these guys, you don't know.
Yeah, they don't have the type of, well, at least they're not given the type of on-screen treatment that gives you any indication of what their off-screen life or, you know, personality is like.
Yeah, who does Josh Woods eat lunch with? where does he eat lunch? Like, little things, like, it seems so trivial, but a little bit of things here and there make you think, like, oh, okay, I know them a little bit better now.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt.
Anyway, this doesn't have too much to do with the pinnacle. It's just us talking about, like, wrestling in general, I guess, wrestling presentation and production.
Well, in the advent of new products that are, you know, proposing to give us a like historical look at a promotion that we follow or a backstage look at what we follow, it is kind of important to kind of take stock of what makes these things work and what makes these things compelling to a wrestling audience who, you know, 10 years ago weren't asking for this type of thing, but now love this extra content and always want more of it.
Yeah, even this week on the show, seeing SCU sitting in their hotel room and Daniel's talking on the phone, I was like, ooh, I'm intrigued because they're not in the arena. Different.
Right.
Right away, I perked up. I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, whenever they're in anything that's not like a backstage area, I'm immediately like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, and it seems so easy with the quality of phones and everything and the quality of like mini cameras and stuff. It's not like in the 70s where you had to lug around a huge film reel and stuff.
Right. It doesn't have to be a huge production to have significant results on screen.
But anyway, this week we had an hour of television, including two and a half matches.
Oh, two and a half.
Sure. In the main event, it was another installment of the Young Bucks versus the Briscoes. Solid chance this might be the last time we ever see them just two on two.
Just two on two.
In a straightforward tag match.
Yeah, I tried to get, you know, wax nostalgic a little bit about that with my partner when we were watching, because I think he's feeling just kind of the fatigue of like having seen this match a million times. And I was like, but this could be the last, you know, the last just Briscoes on Bucks tag match that happens at ROH. This could be the last one.
Yeah, so how fitting for it to end in a double disqualification for the winners.
Right. Oh, man. So, I mean, let's take a quick like half step back for a second. This is the first episode of the most recent Pittsburgh tapings that ROH did in Pittsburgh.
Yes, I looked. I did not see you or Bridget.
No, we are so close to being seen on there, but like we're just eclipsed. I kind of hope we get at least one shot of us in one of these four episodes, but it did not happen here.
Maybe during the Christmas one when Brian Malonis throws his antlers into the crowd.
Yeah, I still antler update. They are still sitting in the bag that they have been sitting in for the last several weeks. It's been now it's going on a month. I need to take care of these things before they start getting mildewy. Please, someone tell me what I should do. Still don't know. Anyway, so this was the first episode taped in Pittsburgh. Everything went down in the same order that it was, you know, done live. And the crowd reaction to this match, and I think this came through in the episode, the crowd reaction to this match, while the crowd reaction to other matches was maybe a little bit more lukewarm than I would have thought, this one, I mean, since it was so early in the evening, everyone was ripe for a Young Bucks Briscoes match right off the bat. They were like, the crowd was on the entire time.
Yeah, I remember halfway through this episode, I thought, wow, they really have faith in your hometown. Because to open with Matt Taven versus the boys in a handicap match, and then follow that with a women's match, a lot of crowds will be tough on the women, right? A lot of cities will be like, oh, bathroom break, it's the women sort of thing.
Even
in 2018.
Yeah, I'd like to think that we are better than that, but I'm sure I will get people telling me like, no, I was at the taping and we are definitely not better than that. But people were paying attention in my section.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Okay, but yeah, so then match number three, two of the greatest tag teams in the history of Ring of Honor.
Yep. And they were, yeah, and the crowd was every bit ready for them. And I thought this match was just okay as far as leading up into the disqualification, the double disqualification. Not that I didn't enjoy it in the moment. It's always different to see something live than it is to see it on the actual like recorded episode. I thought on the recorded episode, taking a step back from it, it's not like one of my favorite matches that they've done. There's definitely one that's honestly, I think I kind of like the one they did back in April at the TV taping a little bit more. Just by overall, like just being more cohesive, just having slightly less, less pattern to it. I will say that double sharpshooter that the Bucks do on the Briscoes got such a massive pop. It like, it was, it's always so exciting to be in an audience where the Bucks are pulling something off like that in and just have everyone like receive it the way that it's intended. But yeah, it was, fairly standard for, in my opinion, until the double disqualification.
Yeah, the two commercial breaks early on, obviously, like, it breaks up the flow. It's hard to get too much. It feels like a restart whenever you come back from a commercial break.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, we weren't out to have a pay-per-view classic. It was a 13-minute match ending in a screwy finish to set up the big pay-per-view match instead.
That's right. And something that you have been waiting for, or at least you anticipated before, but at an earlier date.
So this is so funny. I had to go back through my notes and check because it was like July or August as we were heading towards Death Before Dishonor in September. The Briscoes and SCU, which mostly Daniels and Kaz at the time, but the Briscoes and SCU and the Bucks were going back and forth. And I was convinced we were building to Ladder War 7 at Death Before Dishonor in Las Vegas in September. I kept throwing it out. I was like, this is going to happen. I was as convinced as I was that Hurricane was going to be the new enforcer. I was wrong about that, too. But I was convinced Ladder War 7 is happening at Death Before Dishonor. It makes sense. They do Ladder War roughly every 2 years. The last one was 2 years ago. It's perfect timing. The three teams are at each other's throats. Briscoes have been using all these shenanigans to hold on to the titles. So now they have to defend it in Ladder War. It's perfect. And that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Instead, at Death Before Dishonor, we got Briscoes in the Addiction 101.
Yeah.
Briscoes won. And then the Bucks went off and started doing the six-man takes with Cody instead.
Yeah.
And I totally forgot about it.
Yeah, as did I, actually. But now we have, now the long-awaited, we have the ladder match you were waiting for.
Yeah. So the match itself, again, we'll say this about another match on this episode, too. Obviously, it's going to be amazing. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. The last Ladder War was 2 years ago in September. It was the Bucks versus Daniels and Kaz versus the Motor City Machine Guns. So now we've swapped out Kaz for Scorpio and the Machine Guns for the Briscoes. Briscoes were in the very first Ladder War ever in 2007, defeating Kevin Steen and El Generico.
Wow.
That was 11 years ago. They've been doing this since. This edition will be Jay Briscoe's fourth Ladder War.
Jesus.
And that gives him the record. Currently, him, Steen, and Generico are tied at three each.
Wow. I had no idea that this would be four.
Yeah, 4-7 now Jay will have been in. So he's the king of the Ladder Wars in ROH for sure.
Yeah. So how do you feel about this being the Ladder War that you were waiting for?
Yeah, so I mean, the fact that the match is going to be amazing, the fact that it could possibly, these matches are dangerous, they're crazy. We talked about on Elite Repeat, the Bucks themselves have said, like, their last Ladder War was maybe their favorite match of all time at that point, because it was so memorable and it was so, like, crazy. Nick does, like, a 450 off a ladder through a table at ringside, I think, but the table's already broken. There's a bunch of stuff like that where you're just like, Jesus, I can't believe they're doing this.
Yeah, and the last ladder war, no, that was a ladder match. Okay, never mind. But yeah. Yeah, they're always insane. They're absolutely insane. Yeah. And they're, you know, like they said in the you know, setup for this match, that like, you know, when the Bucks and the Briscoes and SCU, when they face each other in any form of match, but especially a ladder match, like dudes go to the hospital. So Ladder Wars, a, like a, you know, a three-way tag team match with ladders, that's going to be pretty explosive, especially, you know, being in Final Battle.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, it felt a little bit random. The announcement felt a little bit random to me, because back in August, I was like, this makes perfect sense to do this now. But in the past two or three months, it felt like it was mostly just the Briscoes versus SCU. Mm-hmm. They were the ones that were brawling all over Global Wars and were facing off at the pay-per-views, and the Bucks were doing other stuff. They were, you know, wrestling the LIJ and wrestling with Cody against the Kingdom and stuff. And so even last week when the Bucks were, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, when the Bucks were part of the tag match, you thought, like, well, this feels weird. Like, why are they all of a sudden back in the picture?
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. And now they're back in the picture. They're still in the picture. But also last week I said I have no idea where the Bucks fit onto the card. So in that sense, yeah, I guess this is as good a place as any.
Yeah. And I was, like, biting my tongue because I didn't want to tell you about this. But this is where they're going. And as much as I wasn't pleased with the, you know, most recent episode where they were kind of shoehorned in that match with SCU, I'm actually okay with this as the, like, potentially final performance for the Bucks at ROH. Them going out at Final Battle in a, like, ladder war feels very fitting to me, which is kind of making me overlook, you know, the questionable reasons for, you know, like, why was it SCU, you know, why is it a ladder war when SCU has every right to defend their title against anyone else? Like, technically neither of these guys have won this match, so they could choose someone else. But, you know, because there wasn't a clear winner in the Briscoe's Young Bucks match, this is a way to settle it.
Yeah, SCU made the offer. The other teams are obviously going to say yes. And at that point, ROH management is going to be like, no, thank you. We're going to book SCU against the Bouncers instead.
Yeah, exactly.
No, they're going to say, yeah, okay, you guys, if all six of you want this match, of course we'll sign off on this.
Yes. Yes.
Got to assume it'll probably be the penultimate match on the card before the world title match, because tag titles got a big bump in prestige this year. They headlined a lot of Honor Club events. Mm-hmm. I would argue that the Young Bucks were the number one act in ROH this year.
Yeah.
Ahead of Lethal or ahead of any of the singles wrestlers, even Cody.
Yeah. Ahead of Cody, definitely. I think there were months where Marty was probably just a hair over them even, but that's completely debatable. The Bucks have been the most over.
Because he didn't have a long title run like they did.
Yeah, exactly.
They held the tag titles and the six-man titles. And
yeah, exactly, which I think helps make the case for the Bucks being even more over than Marty was this past year. So, yeah, no, I mean, nobody, you know, when I came into ROH in February, like, nobody was, and currently nobody still is, as over as the Bucks are.
Yeah, I mean, we don't like to talk about spoilers on this show. I especially don't like to talk about rumors, because rumors can come from anywhere and they could be anything, right? I could start a rumor that, hey, Cheeseburger has signed with NXT and somebody might pick it up and it might become a big thing. But there's a very good chance that this could be a career-ending match for multiple people.
Yeah.
The Briscoes could come out of this as, like, record-setting, what, seven-time champions or something like that, and having vanquished all of their opponents.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if we are to give any credence to the rumors we've heard, this is something that we, you know, very much have to, like, steel ourselves for the potential of.
Yeah, and if the Briscoes don't win, that raises a lot of questions too.
Yeah, what the heck does that mean?
Well, okay. Well, on that note, though, so on this week on the show, we did see Christopher Daniels on the phone with who we presume is Joe Koff. And the consensus from that little segment seemed to be that due to Scorpio and Kaz winning the tag titles, they have now been offered new ROH contracts. Daniels made it sound like, yeah, we'll sign those and have them into you tomorrow, which would mean that as of today, Kazarian and Scorpio should be under ROH, renewed ROH contracts.
Except if, okay, so yes, and I was thinking about this.
That's what it sounded like. It's like, oh, Kaz just resigned.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Except that Daniel still hasn't been given a, you know, hasn't been given a contract. And he's got another chance at Final Battle, I guess. They're going with this angle where he's trying to win the title challenge, right, from Marty. So my theory is that Daniels loses that match and Kaz steps down and steps away from his offered contract because he doesn't want to, because they don't want to break up SCU.
Yeah, that's, and Scorpio made a comment a couple months ago that wherever you two go, I go with you.
That's right.
As well. So there's a chance that, but even then, that's like a hard, okay, so that hasn't been acknowledged on TV yet. This week, all we got for Daniels was him saying he'll think of something. But on social media, it did break on ROHWrestling.com. Final Battle, Daniels versus Skrull, first Skrull's Survival of the Fittest title shot.
Yep.
Meaning Daniels wins, he gets the title shot against Lethal at some point in the future, in which case he can't be fired because he has a title shot.
Yeah, you can't get rid of me. I'm still, I got stuff planned. I got plans.
But at this point, I don't know. If he loses, they're going to be hard-pressed to find a way to convince me that Jokoff doesn't offer to re-sign him. They've turned things around. They've been better people lately. They've been good people and followed the rules and helping out other people. Daniels is a respected 25-year veteran who's been with ROH since day one. Why wouldn't Koff want to re-sign him? At this point.
Yeah, storyline-wise, you make a good point, but I don't think there's any way that Daniels is sticking around.
I don't know. I got questions, and maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think that is a good thing. And it's honestly, it's not even all the rumors. It's not even that has convinced me. It was watching his various performances during the Global Wars tour and his recent solo singles matches and seeing him get every single guy that he's in the ring with over. And I think it's because, and I've said this on Twitter, I think Christopher Daniels is like the most generous guy in wrestling. And that has become so abundantly clear to me because of how like awesome he's being about like having these matches with guys who do not have the level of experience that he has, that, you know, in other ways he could like when he was slated to win a match, he could like run circles around. But because he's losing these matches to these guys, he's doing everything he can to like, he's making himself look good, but he's making them look even better. And to me, that's the act of a guy who wants to do good by everybody before he takes a step down.
Yeah, I mean, when they had the initial segment with Koff way back in January, he said, after Final Battle, you guys are done with the company, right away, my brain went to, Daniels is retiring.
Yeah.
He's been doing this 25 years. He's, you know, the only Grand Slam champion in ROH history. In that sense alone, it makes sense. But definitely, like you said, this past month has felt like a retirement tour. He's had a lot of singles matches against a lot of different people. No storyline reason for these matches, per se. Just singles matches against people that he hasn't really had a chance to wrestle all that match before.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think as a result, like, to me, it has become just abundantly clear that, like, this is his way of saying goodbye.
Yeah, so regardless of whether he stays with ROH in like a backstage role as an agent or a producer or something else, I don't know. Our money's on Daniels maybe not wrestling in 2019.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what that means for, and then maybe that's another reason that we're starting to see this team of Kaz and Sky. Kaz feels he has a couple more years left in him.
Yeah, that's another way it could go. But again, I wonder if just based on some rumors I've heard, like, I just wonder if, you know, Kaz is planning on sticking around.
So many rumors.
So many.
So much turmoil.
And we,
1 month from now, this will all be ancient history.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think for this particular week of ROH, this particular week's episode, we're left asking bigger questions beyond just the match itself, which, you know, again, like I said before, like, I thought this was a perfectly fine Bucks and Briscoe match. The crowd was loving it. It's hard not to when you see them live, but it, you know, wasn't my favorite that I've seen of theirs. Definitely was, you know, just setting up this big announcement of their match at Final Battle. And that'll be, you know, so there's more to come. So This week's episode overall has felt very much just like, okay, we're just getting closer.
Although, to be fair, you already saw all this in person.
Yeah, but I felt that...
That's a little bit why it feels like deja vu to you.
Well, yeah, but also, like, I felt like that whenever we were watching it, too, because it was like, okay, I see what they're doing here to, like, you know, to get us closer to final battle.
Yeah, like, Women of Honor match this week. Kelly Klein versus Jenny Rose. I already suspected that Kelly Klein was going to be the fourth for, you know, many reasons. She was part of a four-way brawl at one of the Global Wars shows. Was it Toronto? Yeah.
Yes. I think it was.
It was my time to see them in person. They were all brawling. Sumi hit a big crossbody onto the women security at ringside. So after that, I was fairly certain it was Kelly Klein getting the fourth spot. Also, the fact that she was in the semifinals of the Women of Honor Championship tournament earlier this year, and she just had a big showing in Stardom. So it'd be leaving her off the card would be weird.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
So we got Kelly and Jenny in the qualifying match. It was also kind of a blow-off match to this feud that they started months ago when Jenny chipped a bunch of Kelly's teeth and she had to get dental surgery. And they never did as much with that feud as I had really hoped.
Yeah, it didn't. I mean, I think part of it was that Kelly was in Japan, so they couldn't do much with it. I know that they shot at least one little video while Kelly was in Japan where she got attacked by Jenny, but...
Apparently. I never saw that before. That was the one new bit of footage in the video package.
I had not seen it either, and now I have to, but... Yeah, so we didn't get to see a huge build with that feud. This was both a qualifying match for that final battle title match, but also was supposed to be a blow-off for a feud, and blow off for a feud that never really got like to a full boil. So I thought it was okay. I've definitely this year definitely seen better matches from both women. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't have a ton to say about this one. I didn't have a ton to say about it after we watched it live. The out of ring action, I felt like went on to a little bit too long, especially compared to just how short this match ends up being overall. I don't know.
Yeah, it was about 6 minutes. Not very long. I was waiting for like second gear and then it kind of ended. Which bums me out because you and I have been very high on Jenny Rose's matches this year.
Yeah.
And I'm in love with Kelly Klein. So it's just like, I wanted to be so excited about this one. And it just was like, oh, it's over already. It almost went as long as Matt Taven versus the boys.
Yeah.
It went a little bit longer.
Not much. Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna have a kind of blow off fight for a feud, you gotta invest a little bit more time about this. They did the same thing with Kelly versus Deonna, where they didn't get to really have like a like throw down, like a bit of a more drag out fight. That fight was pretty short too. I'll also say this: while I like the new move that Kelly has brought back from her time in Japan, this K-Power move, I don't think it's quite there yet as a finisher. It doesn't feel totally like a finisher to me yet. I think it needs a bit more. I think it needs something to like really sell it, or it just needs a little bit more polish to it. But that like fireman's carry drop, like it's not a bad move at all. It just doesn't feel like a finisher yet.
Well, maybe if she finishes off some more people with it, it will.
Well, that's true. You have to keep working on it. But yeah, it's so winning by pin that way just didn't feel complete to me.
Yeah, I mean, and this was one of the only sort of active feuds in Women of Honor. I mean, Sumi's not feuding with anyone. She just watches people's matches respectfully from the stage. Mm-hmm. And there's the Tennille Dashwood was attacked, and that hasn't been followed up on. And I don't know, Madison Rain and Britt Baker were sort of had like a little rivalry, but not really any real bad blood between them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe when the Twisted Sisters return, they'll get some stuff going.
Yeah.
Because they seem like the kind of people who will rub a lot of people the long way.
Yes. And I am totally for it. Like, I would love to see them develop a storyline, especially a storyline that revolved around a women's tag team, because that just, I mean, we don't really have that anywhere. Do we have that even, does even Impact have a good women's tag team story or a women's tag team?
I don't know anything about Impact in 2018.
I
can't tell you.
I know that their women's division, their knockouts, their women's division, is, you know, just particularly great. And, you know, of the major out there, like, Impact has a women's division that is just enviable by so many. But tag team wise, I don't even think what does WWE do for women's tag teams?
They do a lot of women's tag matches, but they don't mean anything. It's just to kill TV time.
Because there's no belt. There's no title.
Yeah. It's like this week, it's Sasha and Bayley against the Riot Squad again, sort of thing. Just because it's like, oh, we got a space in Q12 that we need to fill, Q11.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Why not add a tag belt then?
I don't know. don't ask me the... Explain, because of sexism.
Fix WWE, probably. Harley.
Right? Like, there's a reason these companies have, like, 7 different championships for the men and then 1 for the women.
Fix WWE. Just fix it, Harley. I know you can. Right. I know you have the power.
It's my New Year's resolution.
Your second year mission.
No, my New Year's resolution is to just stop caring about WWE altogether and stop talking about it.
That seems like a really worthwhile...
I'm already halfway there.
That's good.
Yeah. So Kelly Klein advances to Women of Honor 4-corner survival match at Final Battle. Sumi Sakai versus Kelly Klein versus Madison Rain versus Karen Q. We'll give our full predictions on Final Battle in a couple weeks. I'm sure it'll be a good one.
I think it'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully they get longer than like 7 minutes.
That would be really nice, ROH, please.
Especially with 4 people in the match.
With 4 people in the match, if it's less than 12 minutes, I'm going to be disappointed.
Yeah, and I'm guessing it's a one elimination match. Like, first pinfall or submission wins the title.
Oh, I would love it if... Oh, they'll never do an elimination match. But, man...
Yeah. And, is it a 4-way or is it a 4-corner survival? Because ROH does both sometimes. 4-corner survival typically means... 2 people legal at a time. You can take out to either of the other 2.
I think that they've even said, and I don't remember.
Okay. Well, we'll try to have an update by the time December 10th rolls around.
I think we have a little time.
Our opening contest on this week's show was supposed to be Matt Taven and TK Orion versus the boys. But Taven said, I don't need any help to beat 2 boys.
Yep.
So he made it a handicap match.
Yeah. I know you weren't a fan of this one. Honestly, I wasn't super a fan.
Just everything with Kingdom and Dalton and the boys. It's like Dalton's going back for a month and I already feel like I'm sick of this. It already feels repetitive.
I don't mind this Taven Dalton feud when it involves Taven and Dalton Castle. When it's just the boys, it doesn't really just go far enough for me to want to see more. Not that I don't enjoy the boys in the ring. Like, I always enjoy seeing them wrestle because I kind of love them wrestling. It's so fun, especially live. But yeah, this one didn't do anything for me. I'm ready for them to have this big fight at Final Battle. I'm ready for this feud to just go to the next step, to reach another point in it. This we are kind of spinning our wheels with this feud right now.
I will say, give me the boys versus Cheeseburger and Eli Isom on like an Honor Club event.
Yeah,
because that would be fun match.
I would really love to see that, because I would love to see the boys wrestle opponents who are not like kind of obviously gonna beat them.
Yeah,
it just doesn't happen.
I like the new Taven, the new look, the new really like sociopathic tendencies and all that. I like that Dalton is selling the attack from last week. Like, he was gone after taking the 3 chair shots to the head. You'd hope he would be gone a week later. Beyond that, I don't know. I mean, if we had our rankings of, like, people, like, we were the highest on and, like, the lowest on in ROH at the time, I feel like Jeff Cobb would probably still be at the top of the highest list.
Yeah.
And I feel like for the first half of the year, Bully Ray was, like, rock bottom on the lowest list. Like, we just wanted him off our TV. Now I'm a little bit, I'm more turned around on him, I'd say.
Oh.
On what he can bring to the company.
Okay.
Because he's helping Getty over Silas. He's like, he still needs to rein himself in on the mic a bit. But
yeah, I don't think we've talked about this, but apparently he's had a really beneficial effect on Silas.
Yeah, so I'm not as opposed to Bully Ray wrestling and being around on ROH TV now as much as I was in the spring and the summer. But my point here is, I think, like, because he raised a bit on my charts, rock bottom on our low charts now would have to be TK and Vinny.
Oh, man.
They're the 6-man champions, and they can keep winning the 6-man championships over and over. But I don't know. I don't know what it is about them, but it's
because,
like, I saw the, you know, the when Matt and TK walk out without Vinny, it's like, oh, so he's under the ring with the balloons, right?
Yeah.
All right, now I'm just waiting. Oh, there they are.
There they are.
It's that kind of thing. It's just like, maybe if you just watch TV and don't watch the Honor Club events, you're not as sick of these, like, bits that they do. But I just feel like I see them so much.
Yeah, I would be so much more interested in the Kingdom in general if I had any interest in TK or Vinny. And I just don't. I get the gimmicks, but they're like, I don't get TK at all. I don't know. Like, he could be doing more than he is. And I just don't. Yeah. Vinny's got his gimmick. It's got its limits to me, but at least he has kind of a gimmick and kind of an aesthetic. I've said this before, and I hate to, like, I'm sure TK is great. And he, you know, I definitely have seen him wrestle well.
He's not.
Like, as a person?
No, probably not.
Oh, I'm sure he's a good person.
He's the wild horse.
And maybe these choices are not entirely up to him, but, like, TK reminds me of, like, half a dozen other heel guys I see on the local indies. And I don't mean that as a knock against them or even a knock against TK, but, you know, more just like he needs something a little bit more to stand out, especially since he's like one of 3 guys that is supposed to be like, you know, current like 6-man title holders.
His highlight of the year for me was at one Honor Club event when the fans chanted Little Cass. That was my favorite TK moment of the year.
Yeah, it's an apt comparison.
So Taven beat the boys with an assist from Vinny, and yeah, I don't know. We get it.
Yeah. We didn't even get to see the fun boys wrestling spot where they switch out and they pretend to be each other and, like, their opponents get confused.
Yeah, no twin magic.
No twin magic. Yeah, it was fine. It was definitely we had some dark matches before, you know, the episodes properly started. And to give you a real sense of how things got started with the TV taping, right before the taping started rolling, in Pittsburgh at the end of October, we had a tragedy happen, and ROH did their taping like within a week later. And they were really kind and considerate to us by doing kind of a, you know, just a tribute to our city and, you know, making mention of what had happened and bringing all the talent around ringside to just, you know, take a moment to acknowledge what had happened. So things got kind of started off on a little bit of a somber note. So this match, if the energy seemed like it was building a bit, like that's part of it, but also because this match wasn't particularly great.
I remember seeing a little bit about that on Twitter. I think some other people who were there maybe posted photos or mentioned it.
Yeah.
And yeah, really, that sounds like a really, like, nice, like,
oh,
sweet gesture. And the fact that it wasn't televised and wasn't shared on ROH's social media, especially.
Yeah,
because WWE will do stuff like that, and it's always just like, look at how great we are. Aren't we, like, such a generous company?
Yeah, I think that they were smart to do that because, again, it does kind of look cheap if they do that, but also because all their wrestlers were ringside kind of taking part in this moment, and that does kind of make your heels... Like, that kind of does break kayfabe for your heels. Like, I'm not gonna lie. It was a little jarring to be hearing this, like, really somber stuff and seeing all these, like, you know, really, like, earnest expressions on these wrestlers' faces, knowing that, like, some of those were, like, Will Ferrara or the Briscoes. So I think it's kind of smart to not break kayfabe and also not, like, get, you know, more attention for yourself.
Yeah.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes. Places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week, if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
Only other things, new things on this week's TV. We had a little video package on the Adam Page-Jeff Cobb TV title match at the pay-per-view, with some new comments from Adam Page.
Yeah.
Mostly just saying, you know, you're not that impressive, and I'm as strong as you are, and I'm as powerful as you are. And, ooh, that's embarrassing.
And
I know he's strong, and I know he's a tough guy and whatever, but to think that you're Jeff Cobb level, ooh, Adam.
I mean,
sorry.
Page is pretty strong. I mean, you know, he's got strength. He's got, like, you know, that Virginia Farm strength. I've seen him beat Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah, I don't know if he has, like, Hawaiian Olympic athlete, former god strength, but...
No, I have to tell you what, I am really looking forward to this match again between them at Final Battle. I'm very much looking forward to the eventual... the eventual spot where Jeff puts him in the Tour of the Islands, because that's it's gonna be beautiful.
Yeah, we should. I mean, we'll get into the full card in a minute, but hey, it's worth noting that 8 matches all but announced, and only one person in all of those matches is not an ROH regular. That's highly unusual.
Yeah, it is.
Usually you get a lot of New Japan talent on these shows, or people from RevPro or CMLL, and that's not the case, which I'm intrigued by too, that ROH feels like for one of their biggest shows of the year, they don't need any guest talent. They can rely on their own crew.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how right they are, but this card does look pretty strong. Well, that's not okay. They do have the one notable import, but yeah, otherwise I do think that they've done enough of the work that is necessary to make this Final Battle card as credible as it is.
Yeah, because we're looking at all these matches, and all of them look pretty good on paper.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely background for all of them. You know, even slightly flimsier ones, but even slightly flimsier backgrounds. But, like, they have established some ground for each of this. So, yeah, I'm pretty pleased with this Final Battle card. Do we think that this is set? Do you think there's anything going to be any other surprises?
Well, so, I mean, you already announced this first on our show. The last thing this week was Jonathan Gresham's open challenge on the best technical pure wrestler in the world. If you think you're better than me, come to ROH and I'll beat you to prove it. And this was a fun... It was a purposeful mirror segment of what we got back in September.
Yes.
When Jay Lethal stood in the ring, Jonathan Gresham's partner, and he actually referred to him as his partner on the show.
Yeah.
Not just like my friend, but like his, like, tag partner.
Yeah.
Or maybe
life partner.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how Jordan Jordan graces into thruples, or
look, I mean, you know, maybe they operate under the area code rule where, like, in certain area codes he's Jordan Grace's man, and in certain other area codes he's Jay Lethal. You know, it's who are we to judge?
But in front of mirror, like, both segments, you have the ROH wrestler standing in the ring saying, "I'm issuing an open challenge to anybody who thinks they can beat me." And then some skinny white British dude shows up on the Tron and says, "I'll take that."
So when he gets out there and Ian Rigaboni is in ring and he's asking him, like, about his final battle match, and Gresham starts to talk about, like, his open challenge, I, like, grab Bridget, my friend, your former co-host from the Young podcast. I grabbed Bridget and I was like, just starting, like, said, like, Zack Sabre Jr., Zack Sabre Jr., Zack Sabre Jr. And then the video popped on. And of course it was Zack Sabre Jr. And I didn't know if I would ever pop for a pre-taped video segment. And now I have my answer. It just takes very specific people involved. And that is Zack Sabre Jr. And I was not alone. We were all losing it. I think you could hear it clearly in the episode.
Well, at the very least, you could tell how excited Ian and Colt were about it, because they kept mentioning it throughout the rest of the episode. Like, every time they went to commercial break or went to introduce a thing, they're like, Sabre and Gresham.
I mean, you know, if we're going to be totally honest, you can see a Sabre versus Gresham match. They've been a notable couple from a couple of different promotions. They wrestled in the UK, in the States, I think, for Evolve. Like, there's definitely been matches between these two guys before. But this is Zack Sabre Jr.'s first ROH match. And that's big.
Yeah. His first match in ROH. But interestingly enough, here's something I found. Not his first time. Okay, so his first time in an ROH ring, but not his first ROH match.
Okay.
March 2017. Only about a year and a half ago, for What Culture Pro Wrestling, it was Zack Sabre Jr. versus Adam Cole versus Christopher Daniels for the ROH World Title.
Ah.
At a What Culture Pro Wrestling event.
Ah, I believe we actually just passed this event on Elite Repeat when we were talking about those episodes.
Oh, there you go. So his first time competing for ROH, despite the fact that he once challenged for the ROH World Title. That's an interesting
there
one.
There you go. So it was for the ROH title against an ROH guy, but not in an ROH event, and definitely not stateside.
Yeah. So now he is hitting American shores. And that actually surprises me. Like, I would have guessed for sure that he had competed in ROH in the past, even just for like one or two appearances.
I had looked and I didn't find the What Culture show, so I didn't find anything else.
Yeah. So there you go. Very, very intriguing. I know you are more than excited about that. I haven't seen a lot of Zach's work, but I know his reputation enough to be very excited.
It's going to be very exciting. And what got me even more excited, and this is public knowledge, so apologies if this is spoiler, but he is on the announced talent for the Philadelphia taping, which isn't that big a surprise, because a lot of the guys who they bring in for these big shows, they will, like, you know, stick around and they will do the TV tapings the next day. And I'm going to that Philadelphia Final Battle Fallout show on the 15th of December. So I will potentially be seeing Mr. Zack Sabre Jr. live, which is awesome.
And Sabre and Gresham is going to be pretty much the complete opposite of Ladder War 7.
Yes.
In every way.
Yeah, this is also, I think we're pretty much segueing to talking just about Final Battle now. But, like, yeah. I will say, this card looks promising to me for a number of reasons. And one of them is that we get a match like Jonathan Gresham versus Zack Sabre Jr. And we also get a match like Ladder War. We get a women's four-way. We get Jeff Cobb versus Adam Page. We get Jay Lethal versus Cody. We get a lot of different styles in this. And I'm pretty pleased with that variety.
You know, Flippin versus Bully Ray in an I Quit match is going to be significantly different from the Women of Honor four-way.
Yeah. Yeah, you know that Girl versus Christopher Daniels is going to be a different match.
Yeah, there's a lot of you know, if I'm not one to rank, but if there is the one I'm most excited for, I don't even know, because they all intrigue me in different ways.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not even gonna say like this one is my favorite. This one is like I'm least excited for. Maybe Skrull and Daniels least excited about, but I'm sure they'll turn me around within the first like minute.
Yeah, I don't know.
The Fallen Angel versus the villain.
Yeah.
You know Daniels is gonna give it his all.
Yes.
Everything he's got.
Yes, if what I've been assuming about Daniels is correct, if the rumors are correct, I feel like this is his swan song, and I, at least for ROH, or at least for the time being, and I'm looking forward to seeing that against, you know, Marty Scurll, who I know we've been kind of not seeing the best out of Marty Scurll right now, because he's been in this, like, loop, stuck in this looping story with Hurricane Helms. But Marty Scurll is a genuinely talented wrestler. Christopher Daniels is clearly proven. This is an exciting way to see that torch being passed between these two guys.
So 8 matches, or 7 2/3 of a match confirmed. Jay Lethal versus Cody for the world title. Jeff Cobb versus Adam Page for the TV title. Sumi Sakai, Madison Rayne, Karen Q, and Kelly Klein for the Women of Honor World Championship. Marty Scurll versus Christopher Daniels for the Skrull's Survival of the Fittest title shot. Matt Taven versus Dalton Castle for the real ROH World title. Flip Gordon versus Bully Ray in an I Quit match. Jonathan Gresham versus Zack Sabre Jr. And the Young Bucks versus the Briscoes versus either SCU or Guerrero Maya Jr. and Stuka Jr. in Ladder War 7 for the tag titles. Man, if Guerrero and Stuka pull out the upset next week, that'd be huge for your front.
My lips are sealed.
Okay, well, ROH Wrestling is already promoting SCU, so maybe they know something I don't.
Right.
ROH has been averaging 7 to 8 matches at most pay-per-views, and that's an 8-match card right there, with almost all of the top names in the company.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's it.
I can't think of anyone not on that list that doesn't have a credible reason for not being on that list.
So the most I look through my records in terms of people who have made the most appearances on TV and Honor Club events this year. You have some people with decent numbers like Shane Taylor and the Bouncers, but they rarely appear on any pay-per-view. So it's not a big shock that Shane Taylor doesn't have a match here.
Yeah.
You could argue Chris Sabin is maybe a little left out considering he just took the world champion to a time limit draw a couple of weeks ago and is a former, you know, challenge for the TV title at the last pay-per-view. But again, not too surprising he's not on the card, I guess.
Yeah, I would have liked to see Chris Sabin on this card, but I just don't know where he would go and what he would be doing.
Yeah, then we've got Silas Young, you know, former multi-time TV champion. I'm guessing he gets involved in the Flip Bully match in some way. I Quit matches by their nature are no disqualification, so it opens a window for him.
Yeah.
And also opens a window for Colt Cabana and Cheeseburger and the Shinobi Shadow Squad.
Yes.
If necessary.
I feel like there's a reason we've been getting, you know, more Shinobi Shadow Squad like branding up front with them. And I think the reason is because, you know, we will see them pop up somewhere in Final Battle.
Sure. And then, I could talk for another 20 minutes about Colt Cabana not wrestling on the card. The pops that he got this year, the few times he was allowed to get physical, there was a period we thought it was going to be Colton Bully at Final.
Yes, there was. Oh.
And now he's just kind of, he was in a table stake match, eliminated in like 5 minutes, and now he's back to just talking.
Yeah, I mean, he's still wrestling on the indies. I saw him early in November. I saw him the week after the ROH taping at IWC, and he was just at Beyond yesterday, or on Sunday. But ROH is not using him in ring right this moment.
Yeah, and I still feel like that's a missed opportunity. Like, I know, I understand maybe not wanting him to wrestle full time, but doing, you know, even like a Triple H schedule where he wrestles once a year for the big pay-per-view, but he gets like a full story. He gets to have like a proper like singles match against a credible opponent. Something other than just like a take match.
I wonder, well, yeah. I'm curious as to the reasons why that hasn't happened, considering how over Colt is.
That's the thing. That's my other thing.
I'm also incredibly.
He's not old. He's not like on the verge of retirement. He's not broken down. He can still do a moonsault like anybody else. And the reactions he gets. Why don't you want more of those?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to be completely, for disclosure's sake, like I am a big Cole Cabana fan, and I would be very, very happy to see him in ring more. As happy as I am to see him on commentary on a regular basis. So it's hard for me to say. I'm sure someone who is not a devoted Cole Cabana fan could tell us all the reasons why this is a bad idea, but unfortunately, we are not those sour, horrible people.
Colt versus Taven at Madison Square Garden. That's my pick. I think it would be a hell of a match, and lots of opportunities for Colt to do some comedy stuff with Vinny and TK in the weeks leading up.
I bet then we won't get the Colt Cabana versus Toriano match that I'm so desperate for.
You'll get that. I don't see that happening on pay-per-view. Maybe on a slow TV.
Hey, you know what? Yano is still owed a title shot for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship because he did technically win his match against Kenny Omega. So you could be short-sighting, overlooking the potential next IWGP Heavyweight Champion of New Japan, Toru Yano.
We saw the NWA World Title defended on an ROH pay-per-view. Why not Colt's Jewish North American Championship?
I
don't think he's defended that since he won.
I don't think he has either. Maybe we're wrong, but I don't think he has.
I don't know. And Hanukkah's coming up. Cool.
This is the season.
To give somebody a title.
Give that away. Give eight. Ooh, yes. As a local wrestler that I.
Eight defenses in 8 days.
As a local wrestler I follow, who is also Jewish, has promoted. They really want to do a series of matches during Hanukkah time that is 8 crazy fights, which is so good. Please, someone seize upon this. It's ridiculously good. I'll buy my ticket now. I don't even care where you're based.
All right. So that is, you know what? There's another name that we kind of left off our list here.
Oh, yes. You thinking?
K-I-N-G. King.
That's right. I wish I could tell.
Big push this fall.
Yes.
He pinned Paige. Yeah. He pinned Chase Owens. He pinned Marty Scurll.
He was the Bullet Club silencer to the point where he actually ran the Bullet Club out of ROH. They are no longer.
They had to change their name.
Because they were so scared.
And yet those guys are getting like title shots, and he's not on the pay-per-view.
Well, he got his title shot.
I know. And is that it? Like, he got in, he blew it, and now see ya?
Yeah, sorry, Kenny. Go back to Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise, Bachelor in Shopping Mall.
Oh, speaking of Rhett, where's our fitness champion?
Maybe it'll be Kenny King versus our fitness champion, Rhett Titus.
Rhett Titus, battle at the All Night Express implode.
Ooh, so Rhett Titus is kind of being played in romantic music, and Kenny King has been on Bachelorette and everything. Maybe it's like the war of the bachelors.
Yeah, but whatever happened to the romantic touch? Remember that guy?
I think that might have been before I was watching again.
He was a master wrestler who used to give out roses to like women and tried to seduce them in the crowd.
Oh, sounds gross.
And then he just vanished. He was never to be seen again.
That sounds like that's for the best.
No, it's too bad. All right, next week on TV, it is SU versus Team CMLL for the tag titles. Also, the Fallen Angel versus Kenny King. And Jeff Cobb versus Josh the Goods Woods in Josh's tri-monthly appearance.
Yes.
Every 3 months, Josh shows up and has a match.
It was nice to see him in Pittsburgh. He had a match against Chuck Taylor at the last Pittsburgh taping that opened the entire set of tapings. He's not a bad guy to watch live. He's better. Honestly, yeah. I feel like his skill set comes off better live. I really will say that. He was also wrestling Jeff Cobb, so.
And this is a logical one because he's the 2017 top prospect tournament winner. And Jeff Cobb declared himself the 2018 top prospect.
Right.
Yeah. So
makes total sense. We got that, and then after that, one more episode before Final Battle.
That's right.
So, not the Christmas one. That's got to be afterwards.
That'll be afterwards.
That'd be Final Battle weekend, the Christmas surprise.
Maybe by that we'll figure out what to do with this headband.
Hmm. All right, so that's our show.
Yeah.
I'm actually a bit on the shorter side than you.
Yeah, where can they find you, Harley?
I'm on the Twitter. You can find me on there. It's Talking Honor. Yeah. Cool. You?
You can find me on the Twitter as well. It's ForkPGH, ForkPGH. And also, check out my brand new site, Boy Girl Party, where I cover all things intergender wrestling. And maybe one of these days, ROH will give me a reason to add them to the site. So far, that has not happened. But maybe one day.
All right, and if you want to send us emails, send them to us by 10 p.m. on Monday, usually, and we'll be able to read them on the show about that week's TV, about the upcoming pay-per-view, about anything ROH, your thoughts. If you have thoughts, we'll share them. If you have questions, we'll try to answer them. Let us know what you think about Ladder War 7. Is Christopher Daniels retiring, or are we reading too much into this? Who's going to leave Final Battle as the Women of Honor champion? And if Jonathan Gresham does another open challenge to the best technical pure wrestlers in the world, who do you want to see answer next?
Ooh. I have some ideas. Please, someone write in about that so we can talk about my ideas. I don't care about what All you right. think. I just want to talk about what I think. We'll use your way as a segue into what I think. No, we'll talk about what you think too.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.